Fantastic. Thank you so much, Jeremy. And thank you, Sarah, for that performance. That was incredibly unheimlich indeed, and what you might call a tough act to follow. Now, just to get started, everyone here, and to get you energized, please raise your hands if you describe yourselves as a hacker, or you've described yourselves as a hacker in the past. Okay? So maybe 25%, maybe more. The rest of you can't understand my accent. Hopefully, by the end of this talk, and more of you will be proud to say you are hackers, or you'll at least understand my accent. So my name is Karen Elazari, as you've heard. You can find me online as Karen E. All of the E's are spelled with three, so that's K3R3N3.com. That's also my Twitter handle. I'm here to talk to you about how hackers are both the heroes and the anti-heroes of the information age. So let's get started. Now, I'm actually here today because of this beautiful lady. In fact, I'm here because of two ladies. Well, one of them is a cyborg. But it really was the young Angelina Jolie who portrayed the relentless young hacker Acid Burn in the movie Hackers that aired in 1995. I was 14 at the time, and I saw this film, and I instantly realized that all of the things that I enjoy doing so much, it's actually called being a hacker. And you can be part of this incredible subculture, this incredible group of people that are pushing the boundaries. And then I saw this amazing anime movie, Japanese animation, Ghost in the Shell, and it totally blew my mind because it depicted this android police officer who's fighting a networked intelligence. It's fighting a new kind of life form that was born on the information superhighway. And I was incredibly amazed and just thinking about the types of new life forms and new ideas and new identities that can be born online. Now, I was also deeply inspired by science fiction, and I hope you guys like science fiction as well. And you might be familiar with the British writer Arthur C. Clarke, and of course his three laws, particularly this, the third law is quite popular. Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic, as we saw here today. That was quite eerie. But if you think about that, a lot of the technologies that we take for granted, a lot of the technologies that we've heard about today, will definitely look and seem like supernatural powers, magic, to anyone that's not, you know, very literate with technology. But in fact, it was Clarke's lesser-known second law that I really took to heart as inspiration. It was that the only way of discovering the limits of the possible is to venture a little way past them and into the impossible. Now, that's exactly what hackers do, test the boundaries, and that's why I'm here today. And in fact, this is why my laptop will now crash. This is amazing. They really do have some sort of magic happening in here in the dome. Right, so last summer, I had the privilege of working with Singularity University in California, a part of NASA Research Park in Mountain View. If you haven't heard about Singularity U, it's a private think tank or a research center. And it really focuses on the bleeding edge of new technologies, things like 3D printing, artificial intelligence, space exploration, and new stuff that's really changing the way humanity interacts with technology and how we live our lives. In fact, people at Singularity U are pushing the boundaries of the possible and into the impossible every day. And that's why we are all here today. That's why you guys and girls are here today. Because technology is part of your life. It's already deeply impacted our reality. Anything from our culture to our economics, our media to our politics. It's impossible to imagine our lives without it. And it might have begun as science fiction, but now it's a reality. And in the 21st century, we live in this era where data surrounds us. It powers modern societies. Technology is leaping into the future faster than we can even grasp, as we've heard here today. And in this age, where information is always gathered, analyzed, tracked, monitored, we're told that information is power. But is that really the case? I'd like to argue something different. Since our lives are becoming more and more digital, not less, and data does power modern society, it's people like you, programmers, designers, engineers, hackers, the people that can manipulate this world that have become powerful. Because accessing that information, manipulating it, doing things with data, that's a new currency of power. And that's exactly what hackers know how to do best, of course. And mainstream society oftentimes looks at those types of manipulations of technology sometimes as indistinguishable from magic. You guys know that manipulating technology can seem like a superpower. In the world of the Matrix, Neo was like a god because he could hack the system, because he realized that some of the system's rules can be bent, some of them can even be broken. He had to take the red pill in order to realize that, something that some of you know and what hackers definitely know. In the virtual world of technology, rules and laws, operating systems, and governing regulations are simply man-made rules. Therefore, they can be broken, manipulated, bent, and changed. Now, incidentally, it was this handsome Pole, Polish science fiction writer Stanisław Lem, who first imagined the red pill in his work, The Futurological Congress. He imagined a reality more than 40 years ago where people could actually see the operating system of reality and live in an imagined reality or simulated reality indistinguishable from the real world. And coming up this year, there is a very interesting movie based on that. I encourage you to see it, called The Congress. But going back to reality, in London, if you imagine a hacker that can max out their Oyster card using RFID technology, getting unlimited travel without paying for it, it's kind of like a cheat code in a computer game, or kind of like a magic trick, wishing change to happen using only the power of his will. So that's what hackers do, thinking differently, creatively, using their will, sometimes imposing it on a technical reality, and pushing forward the boundaries of technology. And that's where they've become heroes, as we'll see today. So these are some of the names, the nicknames, handles, of hacker heroes and heroines, fictional and real. These are hackers that rose to infamy in the 80s and the 90s. They're actually siblings to the World Wide Web itself. And I found them to be both unbound, fearsome, but fascinating. And for these early hackers of the past century, information and freeing it was key. They cried, "Information wants to be free." And they went to great lengths in order to access closely guarded computer systems in the hopes of sharing such information with others, gaining hacker notoriety just because they could. Now, meanwhile, the mainstream media, terrified of these ideas, portrayed hackers as trespassers, dangerous pranksters, geeks capable of wreaking havoc on a global scale. And by the late 80s, the term hacker, which was once used to describe talented programmers, became a derogative term, describing those geeks that are only bent on sabotage and disruption, pushing the limits, seeing it in a bad light. Indeed, such nightmare scenarios, like in the movie War Games from 1983, imagined these hackers. That's how generals and government saw them, the powers that be. At the height of the Cold War, they saw technologies like programmable personal computers, automated control systems and networks as very scary. Indeed, it was freaking the hell out of them. So they imagined nightmare scenarios whereby a young kid at his basement can access a military computer and almost spark World War III. Now, at the very same time that these doomsday scenarios gained notoriety, cyberspace actually became a reality. And the early adopters of this new technology were also the first manipulators of it. These are the people that tried, tested, and oftentimes broke the limitations and laws of the new cyber world. One such famous character is an early anti-hero, perhaps, the hacker called the Mentor. He published the Hacker Manifesto immediately after his arrest for computer crimes in 1986. Now, I'd like to read a few choice quotes from this. His real name, by the way, was Lloyd Blankenship. He says, "This is our world now, the world of the electron and the switch, the beauty of the bod. You explore, we explore, and you call us criminals. We seek after knowledge, and you call us criminals. We exist without skin color, without nationality, without religious bias, and you call us criminals. Yes, I am a criminal. My crime is that of curiosity. I am a hacker, and this is my manifesto." So, inspiring words, I think you'll agree. And since then, in the past 20-odd years, hackers have come together, offline and online, in groups, in forums, in organizations like the Electronic Frontier Foundation, in hackerspaces like Noisebridge and Seabase, in congresses, in conferences and communities, at massive events like the annual celebration of hacking that is DEF CON, which has been taking place for 21 years in Las Vegas, bringing together 15,000 hackers. When I go there, I don't see 15,000 criminals. I see 15,000 young or old men and women of various races, nationalities, you know, walks of life, and they're all keen and intent on sharing their knowledge and learning new things from one another. So during those very several same decades of accelerating technological change, as hackers came together, computer networks came together as well. The World Wide Web grew and expanded, and an interesting thing happened. Somehow, those hysterical doomsday scenarios imagined by Hollywood 30 years ago became quite realistic today. Fast forward to the 21st century, and in 2010, or the summer of Stuxnet, the world's first cyber weapon changed the rules of the game. It showed the world that a piece of computer code is actually capable of disrupting nuclear facilities in the physical realm on the other side of the world. Whoever wrote that changed the world. And those people had the power to do so because remote systems that were once off the grid have become increasingly more and more interconnected. And now we already live in a new multi-sided cold digital war. And militaries around the world are recognizing that alongside space, air, land, and sea, it's cyberspace, which is the fifth domain of warfare, a critical arena for political, financial, and of course, national conflicts taking place all over the world. Indeed, it seems that those army generals and governments figured it out because they learned how to harness the power of hacking. And this is what modern advanced militaries look like today. Indeed, these are America's GI Cyber Joes, if you will. And while armies depend on those geeks and engineers, they still have non-virtual weapons at play, of course. But sophisticated as these weapons are, they're also vulnerable because they can be targeted by hackers. Now, for instance, take the latest F-35 fighter jet. This is a multinational project designed to create the Western powers' best fighter jet for years to come. It's funded by the US and the UK and designed by leading weapons manufacturers. Now, the only problem is other powers have already gotten their hands on the specs. So if there are any Air Force aficionados in the audience, I'd like to ask you to compare the one on the left with the one on the right. This is actually the Chinese J-20 Chengdu model. They're virtually the same. So this shows that having a talented group of hackers by your side can tip the scale of an international arms race. Now, exposed as these fighter jets might be, we may yet come to miss them, because these are probably the last breed of high-tech machines that would be piloted by humans. Now drones and UAVs, or unmanned aerial vehicles, are all the rage. And the current models of drones are still remotely piloted and require that human decision-making to fire or to surveil. But the next generation won't be. Just imagine these advanced drones that are coming out with artificial intelligence, automated weapon systems. It's a bit of a scary scenario, like Terminator or what Cyberdyne Industries has in store for us, right? But what's worse and happening right now is that some of these drones are flying, killing machines, and they can be hacked. There's a great community of DIY drone engineers. Maybe some of them are even here with us today. And hackers around the world are already learning how to build and manipulate their own armies of drones, if you will. Drones that can spy, surveil, listen in to phone calls. This model here is a homemade version. It's called the WASP, or Wi-Fi Area Surveillance Platform. It uses the popular Arduino platform, as well as Linux software, to create a spy drone that can crack Wi-Fi networks or create a fake GSM signal, tricking your mobile phone. Now, it's a fully functional UAV, and two guys built it in their garage. And I think that there's more to come. So it's probably not long before hackers and other engineers and tech manipulators can start creating their own personal armies of drones. But to what end? Well, this man has already managed to harness a personal army, an army of whistleblowers and hacktivists. This is, of course, Julian Assange. He may very well be the most controversial anti-hero of the hacktivism's world. He created WikiLeaks for the purpose of exposing the secrets of government agencies and corrupt corporations. The premise was that those institutions should become more transparent and more exposed to the public, in the same way that our personal lives have become virtually transparent to those corporates and those governments. Now, the promise was protection by anonymity and strength in numbers. And it might be decades before we learn fully the impact of WikiLeaks on the information age. Now, while I'm not a member of Assange's fan club personally, I am a big fan of Mr. Benedict Cumberbatch's, and he's going to be portrayed. Yeah, that's Benedict Cumberbatch. He's uncannily like Mr. Assange. He's going to portray him in an upcoming movie, a film called The Fifth Estate. And I believe that film is going to uncover some of the real story behind WikiLeaks. But in a very powerful moment, Assange quotes Oscar Wilde when he says, "Man is least himself when he talks in his own person, but giving a mask, he will tell you the truth." And of course, we all know that that mask of anonymity has now become a symbol and a practical tool of hackers trying to avoid prosecution. This mask has been used by Anonymous, a global hacker movement of hacktivists that protect WikiLeaks, the freedom of information, and work towards various ideological goals and politics, or just for the lulz, worldwide. Now, they advocate strength in numbers. This faceless legion, this networked intelligence, Anonymous, was born online, in chat rooms and message boards, like 4chan, for example. In a sense, it's an organic internet phenomena, kind of like the ghost in the shell. And it was Alan Moore's V from V for Vendetta, the vengeful vigilante, anti-hero, whose mask was transformed into this global brand of hacktivism. Now, V in turn was, of course, inspired by a real-world terrorist, acting here in the UK about 400 years ago, Guy Fawkes, who conspired to blow up the British Parliament. But in our times, in 5 years, Anons have already made their own history. And the masked masses have been disrupting computer systems and instigating cyber riots worldwide, from London to New York, from Berlin to Benghazi. This legion has been rising from the keyboards and taking to the streets, lending their vox populi to support various goals around the world. Now, they often use, of course, controversial and illegal means, like taking down websites and disrupting computer networks. But they've created something which is arguably the most effective form of political protest and media presence in the 21st century, extremely suitable for the ADHD-affected, disengaged generation. They've garnered support for individuals that are otherwise completely disinterested in politics. So while Anonymous and hacktivism has been seen as part of the Arab Spring revolutions, Occupy movement, and many other events worldwide, this is the digital uprising of the current era. And it's given this face and a name to hackers' political power. Commander X is a known supporter of Anons. He said he was proud to be a member of this global internet freedom movement known as Anonymous, while others are saying that their revolution shall be monitored and their leaders labeled terrorists. Now, wherever your own political favors might lie, you know, in essence, they've really given this face, this faceless face, to hacker power and an appeal. And they're kind of like this chaotic, subversive, yet highly popular actor, a chaotic actor, a bit like Robin Hood, if you will, when they break all the rules and when they do it for the lulz. Now, such is the case with the splinter group from Anonymous called Lulsec and their 21st century hacker bard, the Twitter poet known as Topiary or Jake Davis here from the UK. He describes himself as an internet denizen with a passion for change. He's the man behind Lulsec's insidious Twitter feed and many other Anonymous press releases. And he managed to put to words that chaotic element in the hacktivist's world. Before his arrest 2 years ago, he managed to get out this kind of final tweet saying, "You cannot arrest an idea." And I believe that's right. I believe that the times, they are changing. And earlier this year, another hacker hero, perhaps a martyr, Aaron Schwartz, sadly took his own life when facing federal prosecution for computer abuse charges. His crime was downloading academic articles from MIT. You could say it's a crime of curiosity, indeed. Now, this is a 26-year-old. I don't know if you've known him, but he created internet mainstays we all use, like RSS, like Reddit, like the Creative Commons license. Now, while his death was very tragic indeed, it marks a change in the popular view towards this new hacker ethic, seeing the political, philosophical form of hackers, which are trying to maybe change the fossilized view of the current mainstream culture towards how we use technology. And another such hacker hero, anti-hero, of course, is Edward Snowden, that discovered or disclosed the NSA's far-reaching espionage programs. Some have branded him a hero, and others a traitor. Now, we can discuss what will be the particular fates of Snowden, Assange, Manning, and others, but they should be seen as the 21st century cyberpunks, libertarian radicals, perhaps, digital crusaders, or maybe democracy's last watchdogs. The intense discussion with regards to whether they'll spend time in jail or how many days sometimes misses the point. It's not about what's going to happen to them. It's about what's already happening to us and what's happening to democracy in light of those far-reaching espionage programs that those hacktivists have uncovered. So while they might be anti-heroes or controversial hacker icons, they do not stand alone. And indeed, this new brand of 21st century hacktivism also strives for parliamentary representation with pirate parties around the world, trying to influence traditional politics with new agendas of personal data privacy, a change of approach to copyright law, and direct digital democracy models. It might be too early to tell exactly how well will these parliamentary examples work from the inside to hack the system, but I think they're doing something very important. And alongside political pirates, there are grassroots citizens' movements, such as the Crypto Party, which is a network of local get-togethers for people to learn basic cryptography and computer privacy skills. You could see it as an act of digital self-empowerment for concerned civilians trying to balance out the power of the all-seeing Big Brother. Bitcoin is another fantastic example of how hacker culture and the openness of the web can democratize even the most central of things. Currency. The open source peer-to-peer digital money has been around since 2009, and now it's just one of many alternative payment forms. Perhaps it's the MySpace of digital money. That remains to be seen, but it's definitely very democratizing. And you've heard a lot today about wearable technologies, but why not embed them and implant them? Today's innovative tech companies are changing not just our digital lives, but humanity in a broader sense. And they're constantly blurring the lines between human and artificial, born and made, creating new interfaces for us and the machines. So hacking the human body and hacking the human mind means understanding that biology is also made of information processes. It's an operating system of neurons and cells. Electric signals and genetic codes can be seen as software. And that means our bodies and our minds can be updated, hacked, manipulated, or yes, even upgraded. So take, for instance, the real Blade Runner. This is South African athlete Oscar Pistorius. And he sparked imaginations worldwide, showing that with advanced technology, we can transcend limitations. So perhaps hacking the human body might become just a part of our evolution. And this is Professor Kevin Warwick, nicknamed Captain Cyborg, maybe you've heard of him. He's a professor from the UK's own University of Reading. He's known for his studies on direct computer-brain, human-brain interfaces. And he's used brain gates to communicate commands to robotic arms over the web, or even send signals to his wife's neural system. Emotions over IP, if you will. Now, he himself asserts that his work is controversial, but it is important because it tests the boundaries of how humans are going to communicate with machines. And I believe his work will probably influence us all in the coming decades. This is another British cyborg, and she's a favorite of mine. This is Miss Left Anonym. And she describes herself as a faceless, genderless, British wetware hacker who likes people, science, and practical transhumanism. Now, she's performed DIY, do-it-yourself, at-home medical procedures on herself, embedding an RFID chip that controls her computer, but also implanting metal discs at the tips of her fingers that can give her a sensory organ for electromagnetic radiation. In effect, she can sense magnetic fields. Now, she's fast joined by others. Such DIY hackers and academic visionaries are the bridges between the born and the made. They're synthesizing our future. And last month at Vegas, at that DEF CON conference, hackers showed the live audience the practical implications of implantable RFID tags and performed a live demonstration of an RFID implementation in front of the audience. Now, kids, don't try this at home. Instead, try it the next time you're going to a hacker conference, because this man, for $30 and a liability waiver, will implant you with an RFID chip. Yeah, this is Amal Grafstra. He's one of the pioneers of these types of chips. He already has two of them in both of his hands, which he uses to control his motorcycle, turn on and authenticate into his phone, open a safe at his house. And last month at another hacker conference, he implanted 8 volunteers with such chips. Now, of course, embedded technology can be risky and dangerous. And in 2008, security researchers have found possible attacks on implantable cardiac defibrillators. They showed that they were able to intercept the information from these devices and turn them off or even create electric shocks. That's quite scary. But last year, another security researcher called Barnaby Jack demonstrated that he can hack into implanted insulin pumps, instructing those pumps to dump any remaining insulin in the reservoir into the patient's bloodstream, potentially lethal results, of course. This sends a very scary message about how dangerous and indeed hackable embedded technologies already are. Now, the United States Government Accountability Office issued a report, which is their practical approach of dealing with the threat, about the security of medical devices. However, last month, the very same Barnaby Jack was scheduled to deliver a live demonstration of pacemaker hacking in front of an audience. Unfortunately, he died mysteriously, only days before his demo. Nobody knows why. However, a few days after his untimely death, an Android app surfaced on the infosphere. It was released in honor of Barnaby Jack. This app was reportedly capable of using those same techniques he was about to demonstrate to remotely attack pacemakers. They called it the Pace Exploit Android app, and a couple of people downloaded it. Now, don't rush to download it yourself, because the truth is, this Pace exploit was a hoax. It does nothing. It was an experiment by security researchers to see how many people will download and push the button on such an application, and a couple of people did. So the next frontier of hacking is our brains and our minds. And there are some scientists and neurohackers around the world that are working right now to decipher, reconstruct, manipulate, or record our brainwaves. Such neurosurgeons are using technology to hack our minds, using magnets and electricity. They're, of course, trying to cure ailments like Parkinson's or mental diseases like depression. But what if they could read our thoughts? So the future can be quite scary. But I'd like to remind you that many of these technologies were first inspired and originally described in science fiction works, like William Gibson's Neuromancer or Neal Stephenson's Snow Crash and the Diamond Age. So maybe we're soon getting into reality where science fiction is going to be our lives. And in that future, in that reality, which is increasingly digital, engineers, coders, programmers, designers, hackers are going to rule, because it is an increasingly digital world. So in these new frontiers of the information age, hacking is a form of power. And while hackers are often seen as operating outside of the mainstream society with their own code, their own ethics, yet this is a thriving subculture, a community of self-appointed vigilantes. And it's true that they take on targets as quickly as they change their nicknames. So some see them as the villains of the information age, but can they also be the masked heroes? I believe that the popular perception of hackers is going to evolve, recognizing that while some of them are criminals that use their wits and skills for ill-gained profits, many can be seen as hackers for good. And these are going to be our superheroes in the coming days. Perhaps you'll join them. And you've heard today and in other places as well that hacking as a metaphor for fixing complicated issues using creative thinking and innovative technology is already widely accepted. That means that hacking as a term is already getting rehabilitated. You hear about those that are hacking for good, life hacker, trying to hack education, hack the economy, hack financial technologies. These are hackers that see themselves as trying to save the world. And for them, hacking means trying something over and over again, looking into various possibilities, venturing a little way past into the impossible to see what can be done. So I call upon you to join them and hack the planet. Thank you very much.